It's a really amazing thing. Like, everybody's in the moment, they're channeling.
You know, the energy is really moving between dancers and drummers.
I love the community. I love meeting other people.
Everyone's dancing, you know, from your elders all the way to your young little babies.
You know, that idea of community coming together, seeing people, being social.
Welcome to Turtle Island Talks, a SiriusXM town hall. Summer is here, and that means for some people, it is time to hit the powwow trail. While some of us have been on the trail for all our lives, others are just starting down it, while others still may not know how to even begin. In the third edition of Turtle Island Talks, we are going to celebrate and understand this beautiful tradition of gathering, dancing, drumming, singing, and visiting. Please welcome our host, Dr. Pamela Palmiter, a Mi'kmaq lawyer from Eel River Bar First Nation and the chair in Indigenous Governance at Toronto Metropolitan University.
Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, we've been separated from our friends, families, and sometimes even our home communities. It's important to acknowledge that we've lost some of our relatives during this pandemic, and the disconnect we felt from not being able to gather together and honor our lost loved ones was really hard, because large gatherings involving family and communities is also a way to help us on our own healing journeys. But the good news is that this summer looks like it's going to be different. Health and travel restrictions are easing up in most provinces, and we'll be able to gather once again, some of us with relatives we haven't seen in more than 2 years. While these pandemic restrictions are lifting, Indigenous peoples are acutely aware that the pandemic is not over. Even during our gatherings, we still have to take precautions to protect one another, especially our elders, some of whom could be the last speakers of our languages, or important knowledge keepers about our histories, traditions, and ceremonies. So let's be careful out there. I think it's safe to say that we could all use some food for the soul to lift up our spirits and start the summer off right. And that's why this Turtle Island Talks will be all about celebrating one of our favorite traditions, powwows. What's a powwow, you might ask? Well, stick around, because we're going to share the joy of powwows with all of you so that you can understand its importance to our communities and even how you might enjoy them too. From youth showcasing their regalia and dancing skills on social media during the pandemic, to large competition powwows bringing together people of all ages and from all nations to celebrate our diverse Indigenous cultures. You don't want to miss this show. Over the next hour, I'm going to be your powwow MC, so to speak. Okay. And I'll be talking to some incredible people about the origins of powwow, how it's evolved in the present, and what the future of powwow might look like. But first, let me introduce our awesome panelists. Donald Spidell works with Saskatoon Public School Division, where he helps ensure that educational programming is inclusive of First Nation and Métis cultures. And he's also active on the powwow circuit as a dancer, a singer, and a renowned powwow MC. I hope to get some tips from him today. And our other amazing guest is Karen Pheasant Naganaguna, who is an Anishinaabeg writer and artist from Wikwemecong on Manitoulin Island in Ontario, also known as Wiki. She currently serves as a professor at Mount Royal University in Calgary and was recently awarded the 2021 Norma Fleck Award for Children's Nonfiction for her book, Powwow, A Celebration Through Song and Dance. Karen herself is a powwow dancer, and I can't wait to hear all about her work sharing the tradition of powwow. Thank you both for being here on this powerful powwow panel.
Thank you, Pam. I'm so honored and happy to be sitting here with Donnie.
Likewise, I look forward to the conversation and look forward to this opportunity to hopefully bring some awareness and information to the listeners and followers of all those that have tuned in.
Fantastic. Well, let's settle in and get right to it.
Examining the origin of how powwow began. Please welcome Dr. Jennifer Maness from Algonquins of Pequot-Kanegan First Nation. She has been a powwow dancer for over 30 years and is an assistant professor of Indigenous Studies at Toronto Metropolitan University. With her is SiriusXM host Dahlia Kurtz.
Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
What did you learn about powwow, tracing it back into history, that you could take to us right now in the present?
Well, there's a really interesting beginning to powwow. Initially, when I was looking at powwow, when I would look at dictionary definitions, they always said that it referred to a medicine man or it related to an Algonquian Eastern woodland word that meant he who dreams. And I could never understand why or how that was so different from powwow that we experience today. And through my research and really looking at the Anishinaabe Mohan language, the more I studied, the more I found that the powwa sound in powwow relates to smoke. And the wa creates a circle. So saying powwow or powwa-wa, it is describing that circle that comes together. And when we dance, we create smoke. So it's whether it's figuratively or literally in some dry places, we are coming together and creating a community pipe bowl and sending that smoke and prayers up to the creator, like as though we were in this community pipe.
So wait, have we been pronouncing it incorrectly all of this time? Is it powwa-wa, or can you say it both ways?
Well, it has been shortened to powwow. That's kind of that is the contemporary way that people say it, but it's a powwa-wa-gun is the full word. In Anishinaabe Mohan, powwagon or opowagon means a pipe. So those are those that pipe that we use to pray with. So that powwa that relates to sending prayers to the creator as we burn that tobacco and the smoke rises, we are making that pipe bowl when we come together in powwow as we create that dust smoke through dancing.
Every piece of a powwow has meaning to it, has deeper significance to it than what you're just seeing with your eye. What does it do to your spirit?
Creating that dust smoke creates a doorway. Some of the MCs out in this area have really talked about how powwow is a doorway. And I've been able to understand through creating that dust smoke that we create that doorway for spirit to come in and dance with us. So this is a time that we are dancing with our ancestors, that we are celebrating life, that we are recognizing all of those beings, like those thunder beings that gave the jingle dress dance to the people. All of that is taking place during a powwow.
So then you have all of these things taking place during a powwow that all have deeper significance, but there are competition powwows too.
Yes, the competition powwows began to have a rise in the 60s. It was a chance to encourage youth and encourage people to pick up the culture. Because if you remember, or if you think about a time where powwow is placed at that time in history, we were in both the Canada and the US. We were not allowed to practice our ceremonies. We were repressed from experiencing our culture. And the 60s in the United States was a time of great change. I mean, we have the civil rights movement, we have the women's movement, we have Martin Luther King, we also have the American Indian movement coming up. And it was actually also in the U.S., removal and relocation was happening, where people were forced off reservations as they were being disbanded. And people were being moved into the cities. So you had all of these people coming from different areas that were bringing their own dances and their own songs together. And that's where that intertribalness of powwow came from.
Any final thoughts on powwows and anything that you want us to understand better about them?
there's so many parts of powwow, so many stories that are incomplete stories. Teachings that are shared oftentimes with some of the dances are missing the hows and whys of those spirit beings and those spirit connections, and that you can only find through the language. There's a whole story, not only the contemporary story that's shared about how jingle dance came to be, but there's a whole backstory about why jingle even works, what sound the, you know, what beings those jingle cones even talk to. Why cones? Why metal cones? Why not shells? Many of those sorts of stories aren't being shared because people don't know. So again, this becomes when we reclaim our connection to spirit and we start understanding these teachings, I think that that will eventually change how we approach powwow.
What a great conversation. Honestly, I can never hear enough about powwows. I swear, I learn something new every single time. So, while we're talking about the history of powwow, I'd like to bring in our panelists, Donald and Karen, to talk about this. So, Donald, everyone remembers their first powwow. What was it like going to your first powwow?
Oh, that would have been a few years ago, but you know, a sense of joy and sense of happiness. I believe, just being able to go with my mother and my young sisters, and we would camp out, and it just was such an exciting time. And, you know, back in those years, our people we didn't have a lot of money, you know, and so things were very planned and very deliberate. And I remember just the joy of being able to go out and travel and see new people, make new friends, and to put on our regalias and to be able to, the excitement at the time was I didn't know what it would mean in the future to me as to where we've progressed and evolved to, but the sense of being a young boy, a young child, this meant so much to me, and was a great feeling, a sense of pride.
That's awesome. And I think that's common amongst all of us. What about you, Karen? What do you remember about your first powwow?
Well, I'm from Wequimicong, which is home to Canada's first Eastern powwow. And so people would come from all over North America to Wiki to come and dance. And at the time, powwows were started more as a show, but they also were times for homecoming. So as a child, I would be there excited to hear the drums, excited to see the visitors. I come from the generation where drunk, stupid, lazy Indian was the common term. And my parents made sure I went to school officer at a public school. So always surrounded by settler society people. So going to a powwow was just unbelievable. It's like beautiful. That word that people described as drunk, stupid, lazy Indian, I don't know where they got that from, because I only seen a beautiful world. So my first off-reserve powwow, because I would just come home for our powwow, but my first off-reserve powwow was at Animki Wachu, which is Mount McKay in Thunder Bay, which has, to this day, it's on a mountain there. I don't know if you've been there, but I went there. And it was where I first seen Indian camps. And one of the things that I really miss and I love about powwows is the Indian camps, where everybody has their camps. And I would say, too, that was my first time going up that way, up to Lake Superior, is seeing the jingle dress and seeing everybody dancing fully in grand entry, in intertribals. And like Donnie, it became my high. It was like, that's where I felt so beautiful, so accepted. I didn't have to, because I went to a public school, it was about always hiding who we are. And so to this day, it's about celebrating who we are as a people.
That's wonderful. I think it just shows the strength and resilience and beauty of our culture that, you know, that's home for us. Donald, you know, I wanted to ask you about the history of powwows in the sense of how did powwows evolve? Did communities always have powwows, or is this a relatively new thing?
You know, this is can be a very loaded question, and depends on which region you come from and some of the history. Mm-hmm. In a Coles Note version, I guess, you know, one of the things that we try to bring as the messaging, you know, from this great world of powwow and, you know, these powwow societies that exist, being able to celebrate the things that, you know, our ancestors had such a hard time in regards to maintaining these things. You know, as we know, there was a huge price to pay every time that we gathered as nations of people in our homelands, and people were beaten and jailed, and, you know, at sometimes life was lost because of defending this way of life, right? And so, and as you know, people will say, you know, in the Algonquian word of you know, there's different words as to where we found this word powwow. And some would say it was a gathering of shamans and it was a gathering of, you know, people, right? But Karen probably could allude to some of those more specifics because of the Eastern part. But without getting into a big, long piece, you know, our history is encoded in those songs and those movements and those dances. And as we've evolved to this contemporary way, we're still know that we have that customary foundation.
I'm really glad that you raised all of those issues, the history of it, the evolution of it, and how it's different everywhere. Now, Karen, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the history of powwow and its development, because as we know, different nations had different ceremonies at different times. And today we have traditional powwows, which are very different and have very different ceremonies than, say, a competition powwow or an exhibition powwow or a celebration powwow. And I'm wondering if you can just talk about how this has evolved over history and how did it start?
I appreciate, Miigwech, Pam. I appreciate Donnie referencing my interpretation from the East. And I mean, I'm very fortunate because I've seen it since I was a child because we had the oldest Eastern powwow. But at the same time, as a young girl, I came out to the big World Assembly First Nation powwow in 1982 at Regina, and fell immensely in love with the culture. And so, as Donnie knows, I live here in Alberta now. It's dance that brought me here. I have as much family out in the Prairie Provinces as I do back east. But I wanted to take a moment, and partly maybe it's my teacher educator side of me. And even when I did this book, and my mom took me around traveling, my mom and dad as a child. And when she read my book, she said, I did not know this. And I can't count how many people say, I cannot know this. So the reason I wrote the book is too many people get caught up in the aesthetics, the beads and feathers. And so along with that, and from a Anishinaabe Kwe, from a Jebigashegegan knowledge keeper, Jebigashegegan is the jingle dress that I've been dancing for decades and decades. But 1921 was when the Duncan Scambell Scott letter was done. And basically, it was a long letter, but blasphemizing that we could no longer do our ceremonies, our songs and dances, and if so, incarcerated. I wasn't aware of the intensity of the past system until I moved out here, because the past system wasn't enforced in Ontario like it was here in the Prairie Provinces. The intent of both American and Canadian governments was to assimilate us and kill the Indian, save the man. And we also had a version here in Canada from John A. MacDonald and all the rest of those hoodlums, where they wanted to rid us of who we are as a nation, as a people, as Anishinaabe. And I really like how I was reading and listening to an interview by Rusty Gillette, and he talked about how Indians, how we used to be labeled, used to be under the northern mines. We're in the same category as trees, timbers. We're a commodity items. And so We were commodified at expos, the Wild West show, which went took the men. There's a lot of stories, and probably Donnie knows the story way better than I do, but I include that in my book, where they took us touring around, whether it was Madison Square Gardens in New York City or across the pond, to show the world that look at the beautiful Indians and what good care we take of them. We need to, as a people, to understand that it came out of oppression, and we celebrated who we are as a people.
And I think that's an important thing for everyone to understand, and why we keep celebrating it, and why it's just so important to all of us. And now that we've talked about the history of this tradition, let's hear about how powwows unfold in our communities in the present.
What can you expect attending your first powwow? Please welcome Nimki Ozawamik, an artist, dancer, drummer, and singer from Wukumakong Unceded Territory, located on Manitoulin Islands, Ontario. With him is SiriusXM host, Siobhan Woodrow.
Nimki, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm glad that your baby can join us too.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be on the show and to share some knowledge about powwow and what it means and how much it means to someone like me in the powwow scene.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, as somebody who's never been to a powwow, what could I expect? You know, what am I going to see and feel and experience when I walk in?
So basically what you're going to see is we have a grand entry, usually high noon. And grand entry, it's like, everybody gets to show off, their stuff, show off their regalia, their category. And you kind of get to see who's all there. It's a really amazing thing. Like, everybody's in the moment, they're channeling, everyone's dancing, from your elders all the way to your young little babies. Yeah, it's a very amazing sight to see. Very colorful, very flashy. And usually, we dance in counterclockwise with the universe. Everybody is basically what a powwow is. It's like a celebration of life. And so we're giving thanks for all of these things that, we may take for granted, like, being able to walk, being able to talk, feel, see, touch, like all your senses, they're all coming into play when we go to a powwow. We're giving thanks for these gifts that, the Creator has gifted us. And we're also dancing for the ones who don't have that, right? The ones who can't walk. We dance for them. We dance for our elders. We dance for our ancestors, our future generations. So it's not just about us. It's about everybody else, and trying to set a good example for the ones that are watching, bringing that healing through dancing and singing.
It sounds like it's an incredible amount of energy in the room. Like it sounds like really so enticing. And
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about the dancing too, obviously a really huge element of what goes on at a powwow. And certainly, so much about that. So can you kind of tell me about the different dances and what they symbolize?
This is like my specialty, I guess. I go to schools. I teach kids about, what powwow is, and try and break the stereotypes. So each category usually comes to our people through a dream or through a vision. That's mainly what I've seen. It wasn't just created out of thin air. It's very well thought of, very meaningful. Every piece that you see on the regalia, we don't call it a costume because it's not something we'd wear for Halloween. This is something that, our ancestors used to wear. And so we take a lot of pride into making our regalias authentic. But yeah, each individual outfit, represents, who that person is, who that spirit is. And so, yeah, there's one of the first categories in powwow was the grass dance. And the grass dance, talks about the sweet grass and, the grass blowing in the wind. And so that's kind of like how this dance, came to be, because these grass dancers were medicine men. And so a long time ago, we didn't have lawnmowers and all this. We had was our people. And so our grass dancers would dance around the powwow grounds where everyone's going to, pray and celebrate life. And what those grass dancers would do back then, they would pick up all the medicines from the ground. So where everybody's dancing, like whatever is good. And then stories that I heard was they would go plant those medicines, or they'd use them, or sometimes they would tie the medicines on their regalia. And so that when people are dancing, they wouldn't like get trampled on. So, And then there's the men's traditional dance, which is, it's like a warrior dance, tells a story of that time, you know, that when our warriors used to, you know, go to battle and are hunting, fishing, protecting the nation. So they tell a story about that. And that's kind of like where that dance originated from, was like our warrior societies and telling their story, you know, their life story through, you know, one song, or how they hunted a buffalo, how they fished some salmon, you know. Mm-hmm. We have women's traditional as well. So I think like a lot of the dances, they kind of have like the duality. So the women's traditional is basically representing our mothers, our grandmothers, you know, the role that they have in the community. If you see their regalia, you know, thousands of beads, like their whole chest is just beads. And then they have like hide hanging from their yoke, that's what they call it. And then they like swing and sway. And so it's like what that represents is like the water, you know, the water that the women carry. Also the water is like, represents as the blood of Mother Earth. You know, we all need that water to survive. And so when you see them swinging and swaying, it's like the water, like how the waves, or, you know, if you ever experienced that, you see the traditional dancer, how smooth they are. Women's jingle, which, you know, came to the people in a time of need of healing. And so originally from Whitefish Bay, and the story was about Maggie White and how she had something wrong with her legs and she couldn't walk. And so her grandfather had a dream about this dress as he was a young man. And so when he was older, he remembered his dream and this dress. And so he told the women, and the women of the community, they all came together and made this dress for this young woman. And that was believed to say of how she healed herself as she was dancing around the drum. And every time she danced, every push-up, because it goes 4 push-ups, every push-up she danced, she got stronger and stronger. And by the end of the dance, she was completely healed and she was dancing around like normal. So we have those categories. And we also have fancy, men's fancy and women's fancy, and those are like the athletes of the powwow world. So you kind of get like your you know, your levels of the roller coaster ride.
Yeah,
so the fancy dancers are like the showstoppers, the ones that are, you know, big bustles, very flashy. I was a fancy dancer at one point.
Yeah,
because so much energy. And like I love to cartwheel and like do all those awesome moves.
Wild.
Yeah, that I've grown up seeing. And
yeah,
so I want to do that. That really helped me with, you know, my journey.
I just loved listening to them talk about powwows. It reminds me of when I attended my first powwow. The drumming and singing was so powerful. It literally just hit me right in my soul. And sometimes it makes me emotional just thinking about it. But now let's get back to our powwow experts, Donnie and Karen, to learn more about the protocols around powwows, because those are just as important. Now, Karen, I'd like to start with you. In general, are powwows open to people outside of that particular community where the powwow is being held?
I have a funny story about that. When I was home in Wequimicon, one of the things I had learned when I lived out west, on New Year's Eve, they had powwows, they had celebrations. And so in Wequimicon, everything shut down, all the agencies, all the offices. And I had just moved back home to Wiki. And I was like, what? No dance, no powwow. And then my youngest was so small that we couldn't travel to a powwow, my newest granddaughter. And so my son said, Matthew said, well, Mom, you should just put on one. And I'm there, what? It's 2 weeks away. I don't think so. And then I told the rest of the family and they said, yeah, why don't you? We all could do it. 2 weeks later, we had a New Year's Eve celebration. So we went to have a New Year's Eve powwow. And like most, if not all powwows, I put an ad in the local newspaper. And usually you go on Facebook and you can see all the promotions for the powwows. And so I had a close settler friend call and phone me and said, Karen, can we come? Do they allow white people? This is recently. And I listened to her and I said, I have an ad in the paper. And she goes, yeah. And I go, well, if there's an ad in the paper, they're open to public. One of the always, whether we're talking about the wampum belt, the eighth fire prophecy, all of them say, we need to get along with one another and we need to break the misunderstandings. And this is a time to celebrate. So they're always open to everybody to come and join. I do say, though, go sit at the, they'll take a dancer's seat. Don't take a singer's seat.
That's some good advice. And Donnie, I'd like to turn to you because let's just say someone wants to attend an open powwow. Are there specific protocols in different communities around what people can or can't do?
Yes, I believe, you know, most of our folks want the public or the general public to come, you know, and if it's on a First Nations community, you know, there might be some customary or protocol things in regards to those partners or, you know, non-Indigenous people attending. But say in our city centers and our urban centers, we're really trying to create that educational awareness. And so we're really trying to help people to support and see us in a positive light. And so when you do attend, you know, you don't want to necessarily go up to somebody and say, touch something, you know, let me see that medallion. Let me, you know, because some, you know, they got eagle feathers, they got things that are so near dear and personal to them. And so I always share to people and take some time to, you know, kind of go up and build some rapport, shake hands, or can I take your picture, or would it be okay if I seen that a little bit closer? And, you know, and try, you know, everybody's inquisitive, everybody's curious, but you try to, you know, be respectful of those persons wearing their regalia because, you know, these are things that people work really, really hard to be able to establish and wear that. And so other things in the audience is generally the MCs will be able to say to people, don't take pictures during the prayer or don't take pictures at certain times. And so I always say to folks, listen to the commentator, listen to the MC. They'll usually guide you through the do's and don'ts. And while you're there, just be open and respectful as to, as you go to any other event, you know, as you're always trying to be kind and courteous and walk with those good human virtues.
Well, thank you both for answering some of those questions. And I think, you know, what listeners should get out of this is that ask at each different powwow, because each different powwow may or may not have more traditional aspects, have different rules about what you can do, what's happening. I think most of them are drug and alcohol free. There's just like a whole bunch of rules. And so there's no one size fits all. So now that we've talked about some of the protocols around powwows and how it works in the present, let's hear about how powwow has evolved over the years.
As a summer tradition, how has powwow changed over the years? Please welcome Bear Witness, DJ, producer, and member of the Hallucination. He is Cayuga from the Six Nations of the Grand River in Ontario. With him is SiriusXM host Ben Miner.
So what inspired you to mix dance music with powwow music? What was the thought process behind blending these genres, and what makes it so special?
It's something that happened kind of slowly over time. You know, everything with our group started with the electric powwow parties that we were throwing in Ottawa starting in like 2007. And, you know, those parties were like any other club night we were doing at the time. But we came together as a bunch of Indigenous DJs and we advertised with posters and stuff where places where we knew the community would see it. And from the first show, you know, we had a huge amount of support, and the idea came up that, you know, we were doing something that was necessary, creating a place for Indigenous people in Ottawa to come out and dance. And because of that support, you know, we always wanted to do things to give back, to make it more for the community. And initially, we had found another track by a group called Radio Clip that had sampled the powwow song. And, you know, up until that point, I had heard it a few times by, like, you know, tribal trance DJs and stuff. And it always felt really off and weird. But for some reason, on this time, it didn't feel that way. And when we played it for our audience, we got people reacted really well to it. And so from there, we started basically making mashups and edits where we're taking like dubstep tracks or whatever big sounds at the time and just overlaying powwow vocals on top of it. And really the idea was just to say, you know, we had created this club night that everyone was showing up to, but that was geared towards Indigenous people. It was the same idea with the music, taking music that can be and was being enjoyed by, you know, everybody who's into dance music, but that was specifically said something to our people and something that could be identified with as and also identified as. So it's like, you know, it was a double thing to say this is for us, but this is also to show the world that this is who we are today.
Ah, awesome. Awesome, man. So you started out in nightclubs in Ottawa. The initial reaction from audiences, what was it like?
Oh, it was huge. You know, it was something that none of us had ever seen before. And that was Indigenous people taking over a club. People were taking up space in a way that they don't usually. And we see that to this day at our events, at our shows. You know, we see nation flags go up and people push their way to the front of the stage and claim that space. And I think that's super important, especially in urban situations where so often we become invisible, you know, and we don't have or haven't had those spaces to just own, you know. And I think watching people come and do that is one of the most amazing things for us to see, you know, because that means that we continue to create that space. We continue to have that opportunity for Indigenous people just to represent.
That's awesome. Ottawa's my hometown too, so I like hearing cool stuff happen in Ottawa. That's
nice. Rad.
So we're talking about the evolution of powwow. Even beyond the music you make, we're seeing so many other genres and artists now including powwow into their music. What makes powwow such a versatile thing, and why does it keep showing up in different ways?
I think, you know, it has a lot to do with the social aspects of powwow. I know that's a big part of what we connected between what we do now, what we're doing with our shows and powwow culture. You know, that idea of community coming together, seeing people, being social. And, you know, there's, well, for us personally, there's also looking at the connection between how powwow drums and dancers have a symbiotic relationship. You know, the energy is really moving between dancers and drummers in a way that there's communication there. You know, there's trick songs, there's knowing the songs, knowing when the stops are going to come. There's all that kind of stuff. There's like drums getting whistled up by dancers. You know, all these kind of things that play, you know, with participant and performer, you know, and with DJ culture, there's very much that same play. You know, whenever we're doing sound check, we always say we need to hear and feel exactly what they're feeling on the dance floor, mm-hmm. because that's where the communication starts and the energy that's going between the dancers and going through that same kind of energetical experience that's happening on the dance floor is key to the way DJs play and the way that we feel out of room.
Now, what is it that you like best about a powwow?
It's those social aspects, you know. It's going out and seeing our people. And, you know, like I say, it's so important for us to create those spaces in the club environment. Well, that's the original space that we're that we're mimicking, that we're trying a word we like to use, cultural continuance. You know, we're continuing that same cultural vibes just in the way that we feel it now. So, you know, when I think about my favorite memories of powwows, it's like being a kid and running around with all the other, you know, troublemaking kids and, you know, like, you know, all that kind of memories from, especially from childhood, is what I definitely think about in those situations.
No way! I can't believe we actually got to hear from Hallucination. They are my absolute favorite band ever. And in case you're just joining us, I'm Pam Pometer from Eel River Bar First Nation, and I get to host this Turtle Island Talks, our third edition, talking everything powwow. We've covered the origins of powwow, some protocols around powwows. Now let's talk about the future of powwow with our powwow experts, Donnie and Karen. So Donnie, let's start with you this time. Bear was talking about the evolution of powwow in the context of music. But what about the events and what happens as powwow? Have you seen an evolution in how powwows used to be 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 30 years ago, compared to how they are today?
Yes. As I mentioned early on, you know, we were at a very kind of, I don't know if the proper word is, maybe not, but primitive times and moving forward, you know, Karen and I had kind of alluded, you know, there was a time when, you know, to have, you know, a canvas tent or, you know, the camp times and be out. And it was very planned and very structured, you know, and there was a whole regiment. You cooked your own meals and everything. And, you know, nowadays we got vendors, we got people cooking out of, you know, trucks and everything. And, you know, very few people still kind of do the old ways, you know, and nowadays when you look at the hike of everything, I think we're going to go back to those old ways. We're going to start going back to staying, you know, some, obviously I just heard the other day, someone wants to bring out their team of horses, maybe because gas is so crazy, but, you know, but I mean, very modern times. I mean, we're in mobile homes now a lot, you know, those that, you know, obviously have the means to do so. A lot of us that are on this kind of, you know, national professional tour and stuff. I mean, where we're going, and, you know, you're going 7, 6, 7, 8 days a week, you know, and you're on the road. And so, the tour is very exciting, and you see people from all over. You got, you know, we got professional sound people. We got audio, you know, we got light technicians. Now you got people doing live stream. I mean, it's a whole production now. Right. And so, and then you still got places that really like it very, you know, very back to the basics, you know, where we still have our outdoor arbors, our tree arbors, and those are some of the greatest places. And so there's a great balance, you know, I love them all. Wherever we go, it's totally an excitement. It's totally an enhancement to my spirit, my soul, my being. I just love being with the people, hearing our drum, our song, our languages.
Is so beautiful. The fact that it's intergenerational and, you know, regardless of how it changes, like I've seen in my lifetime, when I was little, there would be maybe handfuls of people at some of the powwows, you know, because the community was just getting back into it after lots and lots of oppression, Indian Act laws and things like that. How about you, Karen? What are some of the changes that you've seen over time in terms of powwows?
I could do a book just on the changes. And I was thinking of others. One of our favorite discussions at camp is, well, it used to be like this. And so back in the day, and I'm pretty sure when Donnie was a young lad, there was just two dance categories, three, traditional and fancy, that's it. You went somewhere traditional and fancy. So when I was a young girl, I did dance fancy. And then now you go and there's a big long list of what. So one of the changes is junior, senior, adults, and now even junior, senior, golden age. So the expansive category in age. When I started going to powwows, they were only on our reserves. And when we went home, that's the only place there was powwows. And then it opened up into post-secondary and Indians friendship centers. And then now it's like any given weekend. That's why they started midweek powwows. There's every weekend, there's at least 5 powwows you can flip a coin and go to. So they started having midweek powwows. And so you're going nonstop for the whole summer, 10 weeks. Talk about Achilles tendonitis and plantar fasciitis injuries.
You know, all of this is, it's new to a lot of people. So if they're just getting in touch with their culture, they're only seeing powwows from the right now. They might not be connected with people who know what, you know, other ceremonies were that weren't considered powwows or traditional powwows or non-competition powwows, for example. You know, we're heading into the next segment about the next generation and any of our traditions, any of our powwows, it's important that we're handing those traditions down to the next generation and making sure that we're learning from our elders and everyone all at the same time. So let's take a listen to that right now.
How is the next generation keeping this tradition alive? Please welcome Deanne Hupfield, a 60 Scoop survivor, speaker and educator, powwow dance teacher and regalia making instructor. With her is SiriusXM host Bilal Vakani.
Hi, Deanne. Thanks so much for joining us today. Let's dig right into this. The first thing I want to ask you about is, why do you use social media to share your love of powwow?
For many years, I taught at a frontline level, so in community centers, here, there, and everywhere. And when I had children, I wasn't able to teach at nighttime anymore. Or on the, it's hard teaching on the weekends too, because like I have to be here and be present with my kids. So I was like, I'll do it online and then I can reach more people.
There's a big, big sense of community at these powwow events. How does it carry over online? Because you certainly don't have, I guess, the in-person sweating in the same way or the noise or any of that. But is anything lost in translation or is it almost better that you can focus on that?
Well, it's always better to be in person, but I'm still able to forge meaningful relationships with the people that I support. Some from British Columbia or Ottawa. Yeah, from all over. So it's really great. I appreciate the internet for that.
What's your sense of young people carrying on the tradition through social media? I'm too nerdy and uncool to use TikTok, but certainly like I have a wife who's cool and I am told younger people are connecting it with this content, powwow, I'm sure as well, in new and exciting ways.
Well, if you were raised away from your community, disconnected from your community, as most of us are, the internet is such a resource to support each other at our own time when it's convenient. Yeah, you don't have to be sitting in front of me at a in-person class. You can like learn the dance steps or stories like on TikTok or YouTube.
I also want to ask you, you know, in terms of in the online space for non-Indigenous people, how can they interact in not just a fun way, but a respectful way?
Well, all of the videos that I post online, I always say non-Indigenous people are welcome to learn the dance steps, and I encourage them to go to their in-person local Indigenous powwow. And the only thing, I've been doing this work for a long time, and I've always asked Indigenous community, it's like, is it okay if non-Indigenous people dance? And the answer is always yes. The only thing we request is that they don't make powwow regalia, because our regalia represents our unique Indigenous nationhood. We're in a time of reclaiming all of the kids that are in foster care or the adult 60 scoopers. And we wanna prioritize them in making powwow regalia and doing ceremony to become powwow dancers.
What do you like best about being at a powwow?
I love the community. I love meeting other people because we're all recovering from generational trauma, 60 Scoop, residential schools, and like we all get to connect. And most of the dancers are like teachers, social workers, frontline workers. So we can all just be together and support each other and trying to heal our communities.
There is nothing more uplifting at a powwow than seeing babies and toddlers dancing with their parents or the young children dancing to their specific type of dance or a dance that comes from their particular nation. It really just warms the heart to see our culture still alive. Now let's turn back to our powerful powwow panel to talk about how Indigenous youth are taking powwow into their own hands. Now, Karen, during the pandemic, we saw this huge rise in powwow all over social media, from sharing regalia, how to make regalia, how to bead, to having online competitions. So Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, you name it. Our youth were all over there. How do you think social media impacts powwows? Are there pros and cons to social media?
Well, as a teacher, of course, I'm going to say there's pros and cons, even when we're teaching. It's been amazing. I've been so impressed with some of the, and I'm not a social media person. I mean, I have Facebook, but beyond that, I don't. But I know that there was a powwow online by Whitney. He started that, and then a couple of others, even my daughter started teaching how to make a jingle dress online, a workshop, and dancers were shocked. Wow, I learned online. Somebody in Vancouver finished a dress while taking a class from Manitoulin Island. And so particularly when we understand that we would be incarcerated if we practiced our culture. And then to see this now, one of the things when I'm asked about, well, now I want to learn how to dance. Sure, you can take a YouTube and study YouTube and or a TikTok, but I always say you need to go to the land. You need to go, if it's a prairie chicken dance, to go where that dance comes from. It's the crow dance, go to the crows. And same with the Zhibigashigegan, the jingle dress. Go to the land from where and dance on that land and hear those songs to yourself. And so sometimes some people say, well, I don't have the budget for it. And I think, I remember my children used to sell glow wands to make their gas money and their eating money. And my kids even had to make dream catchers and sold them to the tourists. And I don't know enough, and probably Pam, you do, where if you have a following, you make money that. I actually went to visit my son last week on his way to Regina Powwow, and they were watching a podcast of one of the dancers, and I was like, wow, he had a blog. So maybe that's a contemporary day glow wand, I don't know. But
lots of different things happening, that's for sure. And Donnie, I wanted to kind of get your perspective, because during the pandemic, especially when we weren't allowed to travel, some of us couldn't even go to our communities because, you know, they closed the borders to protect the elders and to protect communities. Do you think that social media helped youth deal with this disconnection and their inability to powwow or maybe learn from people in their community about how to make regalia?
All I can say is that, you know, it's so good that we did have technology. You know, I think people, they needed that, you know, our people needed that. I mean, all the globe needed it. I mean, the invention and the expansion of technology, Wi-Fi brought with man, you know, I think the pandemic would have been twice as worse, you know. So be able to turn on your device and have, you know, whether it was FaceTime or whether it was social distance power or some of these, they had virtual round dance and all these stuff, right? But one of the greatest things was being able to have that connection still in the uncertainty and the unprecedented time that we were in. I just know that, you know, having teenagers in my home, having young people in my home, that helped their mental health so much, you know, their mental space and provided a platform for our people to still be able to connect. I don't know how many, I was probably 8 to 10 hours later when the world shut down and we're at home. There was guys, they turned on their live button. All Indigenous people suddenly found out we have a live button on Zoom and are on Facebook, you know, and our guys, just as innately, you know, blood memory, you know, we kicked into survival mode and we sing. You know,
exactly. And I think during the pandemic on social media, some of the videos that went viral were actually videos of like a little tiny baby stomping really hard during the grass dance. And it just brings you so much joy, not just to hear the drums, but to see that little baby just like go into town. Or the other video that went viral was this child, I believe he was from Manitoba, and he wasn't able to walk, but he was wearing all of his regalia and he found a way to move himself around the circle and still do powwow. And it's like, it's those really strong messages that I think, especially youth or anybody who wasn't on their community during the pandemic where you didn't have access to any of this, it meant a lot to them. Now, just before we close, what's the one thing that you think is most important for people to understand about powwows? And Karen, we can start with you.
Family. I have to really say, powwow is something that when I grew up, it was always the big conversion van or the pickup truck, or even one time I showed up at a powwow at Shakopee. I was driving a little PT Cruiser, and me and my two boys and all our gear came out, and late Jerry Cleveland said, "Karen, your rooftop is bigger than your car," because it was all about going together. And now I live out here in Alberta, but the primary reason I'm going somewhere is to be with family and watch my children and grandchildren. And I don't just mean bio family. I mean our adopted family. We've had Donnie speak on my son's behalf when my son had a grass special. And as a single parent mom in the 70s and 80s, I can count on when I was struggling living on the res, and, you know, weekends in those days weren't always a good place to be on the weekend. So we would go and leave at the end of June and leave for the whole summer. And I can't count the number of adopted grandmas and grandpas and aunties and uncles that helped me as a struggling single parent mom, and who bought their glow wands or dream catcher or us getting in and making enough to go to the next powwow. It filled us. It gave us, and it gave such pride in being who they are as Anishinaabe people. And that is way beyond any trophies or jackets or anything. And it gave my children a way to see the world from their lens of beauty and cultural security.
I love that. Powwow and family being at the center. Donnie, same question to you. If there was like one thing you wanted people to understand that was really important about powwows, what would it be?
I just think it's our generational medicine. You know, I think, you know, it is medicine. And I mean, if you got the, you know, and I mean, just like anything, I mean, there's positive and negatives to everything, right? And so if you overdo it on one spectrum, it's really about balance and people maintaining that balance and order and taking care of themselves, right? And so having that family foundation or plugging into family foundation is so awesome. And that's why I say that adopted kinship is so important, and the camp times and all the different things, because you have, then you have an adopted auntie to talk to one of your kids, or you have an adopted uncle to talk to one of your sons, or, you know, it's so much life, right? There's so much life there. And we gain empowerment from that. We gain just, you know, that collective thinking. That circle will provide, it will give you life, you know? And so, you know, that's how I see it. You know, it's really is. It gave me life. It saved my life. It continues to, you know, be my inspiration and motivation to live in life, just because it's done so much for me and the people around.
It's so powerful. These two messages of family and intergenerational medicine. I mean, it feels like medicine just talking about powwow, just talking about our experiences. And so I can't thank you both enough for taking the time, for sharing all of this for the benefit of all of the Indigenous peoples who are listening, but all the other people who are listening, Canadians and Americans, you know, wanting to know more about Indigenous peoples and powwow and why it means so much to us. So thank you. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, Pam. It's been an honor. Miigwech to you, Pam, and good sitting at the table with you, Donnie.
Yeah, I can't say enough how grateful and thankful for this opportunity to share. Wopila Tanka Ichichapalo, was really great to be a part of the process here. Have a great day.
Well, thank you again. I mean, this kind of information helps preserve our diverse knowledges while helping to educate everyone. I'm Pam Palmiter from Eelreverbar First Nation, and that's a wrap for this episode of Turtle Island Talks. I hope to see you all on the powwow trail this summer. Thanks, and see you in the next episode.
Turtle Island Talks is produced by Kim Wheeler, Kaylin Belair, and Siobhan Woodrow. Thanks for listening to Turtle Island Talks, a SiriusXM exclusive. For more news, music, and views from Turtle Island, or to hear this show again, search the Indigiverse online and in the SiriusXM app. Music provided by Charging Horse, Nimki and the Ninis, and The Hallucination.